Welcome to the LaRouche Show for Saturday, October 26th. I'm your host, Michelle Steinberg, Counterintelligence Co-Director for Executive Intelligence Review. And today we have a special edition of the program called The Moon Connection, Money Bags for the War Party. My guest today is Counterintelligence Co-Director for EIR, Jeff Steinberg, who's also on the editorial board of EIR. Many of you who have heard the LaRouche Show have seen or heard referenced articles by Jeff Steinberg. He has become one of the internationally renowned experts on the Chicken Hawks, the people behind the Iraq War Drive. Some of you who were listening last week heard my guest Lyndon LaRouche, presidential candidate for the Democratic Party nomination in 2004, throw a political gauntlet down on the question of how to clean up the neoconservative snake pit in the White House, a snake pit which, against all public opinion of the world and against the desires of the American people, are going into a drive for a war against Iraq. LaRouche was asked, what can we do to stop this insane war drive and get on the road to peace? And what Lynn said was, I think if you wanted to clean up the snake pit, what you'd do is you'd hit it on the flank. The place to hit is the Moonies. The most important and most significant nut factor, which is a serious threat to our political order inside the United States, is the Moonies. Reverend Moon bought up Jerry Falwell, Richard Viguerie, the whole racist far right in the country, and now Moon is buying up African Americans. You pull that out, and I guarantee you, the biggest factor of loose, religious, and other kinds of nuts in the United States will scamper, and the rest of the mess will be cleaned up. Those are fighting words, and Jeff is here today to give us the full dossier on Reverend Moon's bailout of Jerry Falwell, his ties to the War Party, and his infiltration of Islamic organizations around the world, and some nasty business inside the Democratic Party, which is a double-edged game. I want to invite people to call, and Jeff will take your questions today. We will also take emails. If you're on the internet, if you'd like to send a question, our address is radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. If you can call in, our telephone number with operators standing by is 1-703-771-8276 or 703-771-1958. Jeff, we're going to also be taking questions today from our organizers' conference line. Organizers for the LaRouche Movement, chapter members from places like Detroit, California, New York, are participating in this webcast now and preparing their questions. Why don't you start by giving us a rundown of how the Moonies fit into the current crisis?
Well, it's, I think, interesting to note how we decided after a long period of time to reopen our longstanding investigation into the Moon Organization. I was out in Detroit about 3 weeks ago for some meetings, and in fact for one of the chapter meetings out there, and had the occasion to also be invited to attend an event at one of the large Islamic centers in the Detroit area. And it was a combined candidates night and fundraising event. The leader of that particular Islamic center delivered an extremely powerful and very impressive and insightful attack against the Bush administration's drive for a war in Iraq, the whole imperial policy, the role of people like Jerry Falwell in attempting to demonize all of Islam and create the preconditions for this clash of civilizations war that's been promoted by Huntington, Brzezinski, and leaders of the War Party. To my astonishment, and to the astonishment of colleagues who were there with me, shortly after this Islamic leader spoke, one of the other speakers invited to come up to the podium was a man named Reverend Michael Jenkins, who, it turned out, was a representative of the Mooney organization, the Unification Church, and we later found out was the head, still is the head of the entire organization in the United States. And he very dramatically proceeded to call the religious Muslim leader back up on stage and presented him with a check of an undisclosed amount from Reverend and Mrs. Moon personally. It was rather stunning. It was in terribly bad taste. You had the odor of snake oil permeating the entire room. And so that incident prompted us to reopen our long-standing file on the Moonies. And one of the very first things that we discovered was that the entire Christian Zionist apparatus, most emphatically Jerry Falwell personally, had been bought out by the Moonies over the course of the 1990s. Every prominent name among these insane Christian Zionist Temple Mount fanatics who represent the base of the Republican Party that's dragging President Bush in the direction of this suicidal war were all bought out by Moon money. Falwell, for example, through his lavish Elmer Gantry lifestyle, had basically ripped off the supporters of his Liberty University to the tune of $73 million. And as of 1994, was flat broke, about to go bankrupt, at which point Falwell made a secret trip to Seoul, South Korea, met with Reverend Moon and top people from the Moon organization, and the next thing you know, through elaborate financial cutouts, Moon had provided $3.5 million to Falwell, and in the course of that had bought up for pennies on the dollar the entire $73 million in Falwell's debt. Immediately after which, Falwell began emerging as a kind of a pudgy grinning prop at all of Reverend Moon's international front group events. I should say this is the same time frame in which former President George Bush made a series of high-profile international trips to Tokyo, to Argentina, where he too showed up at these Moon events standing next to Reverend Moon and basically taking in millions of dollars in payoffs for these embarrassing public endorsements of Moon, who is a stark raving lunatic sex pervert. I mean, that's the basic, fair, documented characterization of this guy. So Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Dobson, Gary Bauer, Tim and Beverly LaHaye, all of the well-known celebrities of this Christian Zionist apparatus are all in Moon's pocket. And so the idea of Moon having representatives running around the Islamic community in the United States, around the world, promoting this phony kind of ecumenicism, while at the same time they're bankrupting the man who, the night after I was on TV in Detroit, got on television on 60 Minutes and announced that the Prophet Muhammad himself was a terrorist and that Islam, with 1.4 billion practitioners today, is nothing but a terrorist religion. So this whole thing stinks to high hell. It's basically sex and money aimed at buying off people who otherwise would be very much inclined to fight against this war and to fight for other issues of social justice that are going to be coming up as the dominant factors in American and international life as we go deeper into a depression, the threat of war, and these other things.
Okay. There seems to be a lot of contradictions in the involvement of Moon with Islam, as you've pointed out, also with Jerry Falwell himself. after all, Falwell, Pat Robertson, these kind of people are included at top events at the White House, not just in this administration, but for years. And one of the other questions we have to consider is the Moonies have been around for a long time. They control the second major newspaper in Washington, D.C., the Washington Times, and they are known as the leading voice of neoconservatives. Now, what exactly is this apparatus? What role are they playing in the Iraq War at this point?
Well, look, the Washington Times is one of the two or three leading propaganda organs for the War Party today. Bill Gertz, who happens to be, as I understand it, a practicing member of the Moonie Church, is one of the number one recipients of leaks on a day in and day out basis from this whole apparatus of neoconservative, right-wing Zionists inside the Bush administration, particularly the Wolfowitz, Pearl, Feith apparatus at the Pentagon, and people like Elliot Abrams right there at the White House, and a whole crew in the office of Vice President Cheney. If you were to basically take the publishing and TV empire of Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox TV, the Weekly Standard magazine, and the New York Post, and then look at the Moon operation, principally centered around the Washington Times and United Press International, which is also now a Moon publication, then what you would see is that the entirety of the propaganda apparatus that's involved in this war drive is located principally in those two places. So the Moonies and this Murdoch apparatus, that's it. That's what you're dealing with in terms of the hardcore of this operation. Now, the Washington Times loses somewhere between $30 and $100 million a year. In other words, it's a loss leader for the entire international Moon apparatus. And we're just beginning to try to put together a kind of ballpark financial spreadsheet of what amounts of money pass through this Moon operation on an annual basis. But I can tell you that we're barely halfway through the effort, and we're already up in the range of tens of billions of dollars. So there is no conceivable legitimate source of money that can explain the scale of this operation. It's offshore, it's dirty money. There are well-known long-standing ties to right-wing organized crime networks, the World Anti-Communist League, first in Asia, then in Europe and Latin America, which was a hotbed of old wartime Nazi and fascist networks, was an integral part of the entire story of the Moon operation from the very outset. They are tied to the Yakuza in Asia, the Japanese organized crime apparatus. The Moonies were on the ground in Bolivia intensively during the early 1980s when the cocaine colonels ran their coup and turned Bolivia into the biggest supplier of cocaine on the planet, funding, among other things, the Ali North secret government operations in Central America through the Moonies.
Okay, let's go into some detail on this. Earlier you described Reverend Sun Myung Moon as a sex pervert, and I understand there are some records in North Korea and South Korea about this. And today, that theology takes background takes a kind of strange form in the aspect of their theology in these mass marriages. Why don't you go through the background material and bring us up to date with the Million Family March, which took place at the end of 2000.
The issue of Reverend Moon's theology is perhaps one of the greatest sources of embarrassment for people of all religious faiths who become corrupted through the process of being bought off with Moon money and Moon sex. Reverend Moon himself, and this is fairly well documented from the public records, including declassified CIA and DIA documents, which journalists have gotten over the years under the Freedom of Information Act. Reverend Moon was a sort of an itinerant preacher running around the countryside in North Korea during the period of the Korean War. He was a member of some kind of Israelite cult, which we're still doing some research on the background of. He was arrested in North Korea on sex crimes. He was jailed there when the MacArthur forces invaded the North during the Korean War. They liberated areas of the country. They opened up the jails. Moon escaped to the South. By 1955, he was back in jail in South Korea, again on morals charges, on sex crime charges. He seemed to have a particular affinity for underage girls. And that's where he was, basically, when he was picked up by the founding generation of top people in the Korean CIA, which was founded during this period by Kim Jong-pil and by a colonel named Bo Hee Pak, who to this day is one of the real actual controllers of the whole Moon apparatus. Moon himself was always a kind of a prop for the operation. Now, if you go to the 4th of July 2002 issue of the Washington Times, you'll find that there was a full-page ad taken out by Moon in which he lays out his theology, the crux of which is that Moon says that Jesus Christ failed in his mission because he was crucified before he was able to marry and produce children. In Moon's theology, the act of original sin was that Eve fornicated with Satan, and that all humanity from that point onward was guilty of the original sin because Satan and Eve produced the human race offsprings. Moon claims that he was visited by Jesus Christ and told that his job was to fulfill Christ's failed mission. And therefore, Moon began both proclaiming himself to be the true parents, he and his fourth wife, and they began holding these mass marriage ceremonies, pairing off Korean and Japanese and other Asian young girls who they brought over in droves from the Far East, marrying them off to all sorts of religious leaders, politicians, you name it. What Moon actually claims is a kind of a Nazi master race theology, that he is the true parent and the offsprings of his mass marriages are the only true people who are not guilty of original sin. In this 2002 4th of July advertisement, he actually claimed to have statements endorsing his religion from Jesus Christ, from Joseph Stalin, from Karl Marx, from Deng Xiaoping. He even had the audacity to claim to have a quote directly from God announcing that Reverend Moon is the true King of Kings. So this is, you know, really off the charts stuff. And this is the open and out front theology. People who've closely studied the Moon organization, who've infiltrated it, have described the group as a kind of one big sex harem. And in fact, the U.S. Congress in 1978, during the Koreagate scandal, investigated the Moon organization as part of this Korean bribery and sex ring that was operating all over Washington, D.C., and found that he was running basically a harem of 300 prostitutes that were being sicked on every congressional office that they could get access to.
Now, we're all familiar here in Washington with the conservative side of the Moon apparatus, but I understand that there's a big new thrust to get into the Democratic Party, and there may even be some connections to Senator Joe Lieberman through the faith-based initiative. Is this what's developing on this story?
Well, there was, as you mentioned earlier, the Million Family March that took place in the latter part of 2000, which Moon apparently poured a lot of money into as a means of sort of getting his own theatrical show of this mass marriage ceremony included in the operation. In 2001, Moon made a 52-city tour of the United States, and largely concentrated on African American, inner city, Protestant, and Catholic denominated churches, and basically went around spreading a lot of money. The standard procedure was that the local church that hosted Moon on his tour would receive a whole bunch of these gold watches, Christian Barnard commemorative gold watches, which are manufactured at a factory owned by Reverend Moon. And it was for the people who really wanted to get deeply into helping Moon on his operation. There were Korean and Japanese brides that were provided. It was really a kind of a sick display of just crass bribery and corrupting. And the word that went out, particularly because of the well-known close association of George Bush Sr. with Reverend Moon during the mid-1990s, when he was on these tours of Latin America and Asia accompanying Reverend Moon, was that if you wanted to get in on the faith-based initiative scam that Bush was promising, of course, 2 years into the administration, the first penny is yet to be spent. But the line was that the doorkeeper for the whole operation was Reverend Moon. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, Moon was the entree point to the pot of administration faith-based initiative gold. And one of the people who jumped fastest through the Moon hoop as a sponsor on Capitol Hill of one of these Moon faith-based initiatives was our favorite senator from Connecticut, Joe Lieberman, who, of course, recently was on display at the White House as one of the few Democrats who openly embraced Bush on this Iraq war. In fact, has been pushing Bush, along with John McCain, all along to go to a war that is preposterous and will be politically suicidal for the United States.
Jeff, we have a couple of emails that have come in from listeners. Let me start with Drew, who has sent in an email question. Subject, Moon and the Strategic Defense Initiative. Did Moon openly support the SDI project put forth by Lyndon LaRouche in the Washington Times? And did he take credit for formulating the plans of the SDI?
What actually happened is quite different than that. No, Moon and that whole right-wing apparatus that he had already bought up in the 1980s, the political right wing, the Buckleyite Heritage Foundation, High Frontiers, that network was already hardwired into Moon money in the early 1980s, in part because Moon was one of the biggest sources of offshore dirty money to the whole Ali North Iran-Contra fiasco. What happened is that the Strategic Defense Initiative policy that was announced by President Ronald Reagan in a now famous nationwide television address on March 23, 1983, was a proposal to break free from the H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, pugwash idea of mutually assured destruction, thermonuclear terror, that had been put in place by Bertrand Russell before the end of World War II, immediately following the death of Franklin Roosevelt. LaRouche's idea was a cooperative program involving the United States, the Soviet Union, Western Europe, Japan, and others. He was in Argentina, for example, discussing the role that Argentina and Brazil could play in the development of this international program to create a global defensive shield against the threat of thermonuclear offensive warfare. After LaRouche's policy was publicly endorsed by President Reagan, catching everyone by surprise with very few exceptions, then a counter-gang operation was launched to destroy that initiative and to essentially turn it into yet another Cold War provocation. And that operation became associated with the Heritage Foundation, with people like General Daniel Graham and his High Frontier organization. That was a wrecking ball that was aimed at and to a large extent successfully destroyed the opportunity for U.S.-Soviet cooperation on SDI. And so Moon was part of the apparatus, indeed probably the financial glue behind the apparatus that actually sought to destroy the LaRouche SDI initiative as it was fully embraced and fully understood by President Reagan and some of his top national security aides, but emphatically rejected by this Moon Heritage Foundation right wing.
So, in fact, the great anti-communist apparatus of the Heritage Foundation, Moonies, etc., instead of going for the Strategic Defense Initiative, they were actually sabotaging the operation that LaRouche and President Ronald Reagan had worked out when Lyndon LaRouche was the back channel to the Soviets.
Precisely.
Okay. We have a number of questions from our organizers' conference line, which we will go to in a few minutes. I just want to ask you to briefly summarize the situation in the United Nations as we went into the weekend, because it looks like this whole Christian Zionist Mooney apparatus is going to try and push for Bush to go into a unilateral action against Iraq because of world opposition.
They're going to definitely try to do that. It's not really clear what the outcome is going to be. Remember that I guess it was on this show 2 weeks ago that Mr. LaRouche said that the critical objective was to jam things up.
That's right.
To slow down the momentum for war, to throw up as many obstacles as possible, because the world is going to be a completely different place after November 5th when the midterm U.S. elections take place. And some people have described this whole Iraq war mania as a weapon of mass distraction to keep the American electorate's attention away from the real legitimate issues that they are in fact worried about. First and foremost, the accelerating economic and financial collapse in the United States and around the world. So up through the end of just this past week, yesterday, the day before, there was still absolutely no resolution between the United States and France and Russia over the formulation of the resolution to be introduced into the Security Council. The U.S. drafted a compromise. It was really just a rewrite of the same exact bellicose language authorizing use of force without a second UN resolution. And so on Thursday night, the French and the Russians announced that they had an alternative draft because the draft of the U.S., the revised draft, was completely unacceptable. And so on Friday, the U.S. raced before the Security Council and formally submitted their resolution, which mandates that a debate and then a vote takes place on that resolution before anything else can be taken up. In other words, they prevented the French-Russian version from being released. So now we're in a situation where there's no doubt that as we speak right now, there's intensive behind-the-scenes negotiations going on in New York among at least the permanent five UN ambassadors. And so this thing is going to move into an accelerated phase beginning Monday, but right now it's still jammed up. I think that the Bush administration has come under so much internal pressure from the opposition in the country, which LaRouche has played a pivotal role in catalyzing, and the international opposition, that the U.S., I think, even as insane as Bush and Cheney are behaving and as stark raving crazy as these Christian Zionists are, I think that the administration would still have to really think long and hard before they go for a completely unilateral attack in the Persian Gulf. I can't rule it out, but it's not something that's automatically going to happen. So we're still in a jam mode.
Okay, let's leave it there for a few announcements. You've been listening to The LaRouche Show with our special guest, Jeffrey Steinberg, counterintelligence co-director of EIR and senior editor for the publication. What you've heard today so far is just typical of EIR and the LaRouche movement's ability to bring you the story behind the story. We're asking listeners and friends of listeners to visit our website at www.larouchepub.com. That's LaRouchePub.com. There, every week, you'll find leading stories that give you the news behind the news. If you had been listening to the normal media this week, the warmongers of the Beltway and the New York Post and the like, you would have thought that the United Nations would already have voted up the U.S.-backed, British-backed resolution. Instead, the events have taken a radically different turn. You can call us to get a sample copy of Executive Intelligence Review at 1-888-EIR-3258. That's a toll-free number, 1-888-327-3258. Sorry, 347-3258. The LaRouche Show is live on the web on Saturdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to send us an email question, that's radio@larouchepub.com. Jeff, I'm going to go to the organizers conference line. Is John from Ontario on the line? Hello, John. John from Ontario on the organizers conference line. Are you there?
Hello? Hello?
Go ahead, John.
Oh, good. Okay. My question is, why did it take so long for this situation with the Moonies to come out?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, you know, sometimes there's a factor of serendipity. I mean, we've known for a very long time about what this Mooney menace is. In fact, about 2 years ago, the LaRouche organization in Brazil submitted documentation before a state legislative commission that was investigating the activities of the Moonies in an area along the Brazil border with Paraguay and Bolivia. There was widespread suspicion that the Moonies were involved in smuggling, perhaps drug smuggling, and other kinds of illicit activity. And the testimony that we presented was a factor in the decision by the state government in that particular area of Brazil, Mato Grosso do Sul, to earlier this year raid the offices of the Moon Church and their organizations, both in that state and in Sao Paulo, and to basically prosecute the Mooney organization for money laundering, tax evasion, and also posing a threat to the national security of Brazil. But as I described earlier, it was in a sense the paradox of finding that some of the most courageous and outspoken leaders of the Arab American community in the United States were being targeted and courted by the Moonies, whose links to the radical right wing in this country, this literally ultra-fascist right wing, have been very well known to us for a long time, and we've continuously exposed that. But when we saw that some of the people who we look to be some of the important constituents of the LaRouche movement, particularly in the fight against this clash of civilizations, we decided it was time to take more dramatic action. And as I say, as we began to update our files and revisit the question of this multi-billion dollar dirty money empire, it became clear to us that this is the glue that holds together the entire war party apparatus, at least in this country. So this is a story that we've been on to for a very long time, but this recent event prompted us to give renewed emphasis and place a particularly strong strategic focus on the Moonies. In effect, they become the vulnerable flank through which we can most efficiently target our resources to stop this horrible war from happening.
Well, I'd like to add a little bit of my experience to John's question on this. Actually, there have been a number of exposés, including by EIR in the LaRouche publications over the years, of the Moonies. And one of the big problems we're dealing with in Washington is the corruption of the citizenry. Because the ideas that are represented by the Washington Times, and they're sometimes completely outrageous calls for war against Islam or against China. The role that they played in the nasty operations against the Clinton administration on the Monica Lewinsky, Kenneth Starr operation and so forth, real hypocritical double standards. And yet, the American people don't seem to mind that their congressmen and their state senators and their mayors and their U.S. senators are literally in bed with this apparatus. So you have Reverend Moon declaring himself as having direct communications with God and having a mission to take over the entire United States, handing money around, and nobody's complaining about it. And I think that kind of corruption gets us in the situation, as Mr. LaRouche described on this show 1 week ago and the week before. You elect them, and then the populace turns around and complains how rotten their politicians are. So now's our chance to really clean this up. And I think by getting out the dossier this time with the truth about the Iraq War, we're going to see a whole different response and phenomenon. Here's an email from a supporter, Fred, who says the subject is Reverend Moon's sympathies for the devil. I'm going to read you part of this, Jeff, and you can comment. Fred says, Falwell's flock would probably be shocked to learn that their financial angel, Reverend Moon, has expressed sympathies for the devil. On May 1st, 1996, as quoted on a web page entitled Satan Joins the Moonies, from a speech he gave at a Mooney leadership meeting, Moon said that, quote, Lucifer has repented and confessed. Furthermore, in a prayer once posted to his own website, Moon stated, quote, Satan apologized on March 21, 1996, specifically to God, and claimed he would support him to create the ideal garden of love. Do you have any comments on that?
The incredible thing, Fred's quote is right to the point. You go to the Unification Church website, and quotes like that can be found all over the place. Back in 1996, when former President Bush traveled with Reverend Moon to Buenos Aires for the launching of their Spanish language edition down there of the Washington Times, Moon gave this incredible speech, which they published in full, again, as a full-page ad in the Washington Times. This is a family show, so I'm going to spare the details, but it is a wild, scatological description of, let's just leave it at that. For those who have wrought iron stomachs, go to the Moon website and you can find some of Moon's discussions about excrement and other bodily fluids. The guy is a sicko. He's a, as I say, he runs basically a sex cult. The internal operation itself is largely a sex cult, and his theology is itself, by its very nature, satanic. Now, I think there's another dimension to the investigation that I should mention, which Fred and others will find particularly, I think, important. We know on a certain level that the psychological warfare specialists at places like the Tavistock Institute in Britain and some of the Kurt Lewin projects here in the United States have always understood that the pathways to corruption are generally sex, money, and family. If you can corrupt people and degrade them by sexual debauchery, basically paid sex, or if you can buy people off, those kinds of things will tend to debilitate people's ability to actually function in a moral fashion. And when you're targeting the entire clergy of the United States, leaders of various peace organizations and things like this, you're really going after the heart of the constituency leadership within the population itself. Now, we're in the process of tracing this whole moon operation, this massively financed dirty money, sex, and drug cult, back to the ideas first really expressed in detail by H.G. Wells in 1928 when he wrote his Open Conspiracy. And he talked about the idea of launching a pacifist movement to destroy the nation-state system and create world government based on population control, Malthusianism, and things like that. One of the main front groups that the Moon Organization runs today and has run since 1971 is something called the International Conference on the Unification of Sciences. And this is a project that was literally launched by Lord Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells, the Huxley brothers, back in the 1920s and 30s as part of this open conspiracy to destroy science and drive towards world government. Now this is a unification church front operation. People like Alexander King, like Aurelio Pache, the founder of the Club of Rome, the leading, most out front organization promoting global population reduction, right up there with Prince Philip and the World Wildlife Fund. This apparatus is provably fully integrated with this moon sex and dirty money cult. So this is the effort to weaken those circles in the United States in particular who would be the line of resistance against destroying the nation-state system and moving towards these various kinds of world government schemes. The fulfillment of the open conspiracy, which is also the agenda being pursued by the Chicken Hawk neocons as well.
I'd like to get Scott on from New Jersey from the organizers' conference line. Scott, are you there with a question?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, Jeff, how you doing? It's good to talk to you. I want to ask a question that I suppose it's a little bit off your specific subject of the Moonies, but it has to deal with the war drive, and but specifically with September 11th. I was at a couple of meetings, and I was at a couple of meetings and was we were talking about there was an investigation done, I believe, by yourself and EIR that hasn't been published yet, which found out that there has been investigations done by official government agencies that have determined that September 11th had to have been conducted from the inside. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that and let us know when and if EIR will be putting that information into print.
Well, I mean, we have spoken since September 11th with a number of government officials, people involved in the investigation. And we've made Mr. LaRouche's evaluation of those events very well known. We published a report early this year called Zbigniew Brzezinski and September 11th, which developed in detail why it was the case that this attack could not have conceivably taken place without some kind of complicity of forces inside the United States. We also talked about the active involvement of a network of Israeli spies that were running around all over the United States both before and after September 11th. And these are all questions that are on the table. Some of those government officials have come back to me and others at EIR and said that, yes, there is an ongoing concern and investigation into these questions of internal American involvement in the events of September 11th. These people say that this is a very closely held secret in terms of the details of that aspect of the investigation, and that basically what's going on still to this day and will probably continue for several years to come is the unraveling of many layers of the onion to figure out what exactly happened. One thing that's perfectly certain at this point is that many security systems that had formerly been in place, that most people presumed were still in place to guard against these kinds of attacks, had been taken down. Not that they were taken down on September 11th to create a particular window of opportunity for the next day, but that the whole system of national security, certain built-in capabilities, had been all but shut down in the period following the collapse of the Soviet Union. And while this was not generally known, it was clearly known to those people who put the attack together. And so this, you know, begs at least one aspect of the question of the inside factor on the investigation. As I say, there are many open-ended questions on this Israeli aspect of it, and also, you know, to the extent that there's any evidence that Mohammed Atta or a Mohammed Atta was involved in the events of September 11th, then you've got to start from that point and ask a whole bunch of other questions. Who was this guy? What was his profile? What intelligence services was he associated with? Remember Mr. LaRouche's comments again 2 weeks ago on this show, where he talked about the fact that there is no such thing as international terrorism as an independent phenomenon not controlled by and sponsored and run by one or a combination of intelligence services. Now, we have a history in the 1980s, which is exactly what we are discussing when we talk about the Moonies, who CIA documents describe it as a simple front for the Korean CIA. It's more complicated than that, but here's an organization that's an intelligence front. We were running terrorists throughout the 1980s under official U.S. intelligence cover. What was the Mujahideen network that was running the operation to drive the Soviet Red Army out of Afghanistan? In the 1980s, they were called freedom fighters, and Osama bin Laden was one of the people who was working for Uncle Sam. So all of these issues, there's a continuity of this history from the 1980s through September 11th, 2001. There are long historical ties between elements within the U.S. intelligence community, particularly corrupted rogue elements, and the people who we're now describing as the worst terrorist phenomenon on the planet. Many, many unanswered questions, and as I say, I'm somewhat heartened at the fact that we continue to get indications from people in government who talk to us quietly on the side that these issues, these concerns put forward by Mr. LaRouche are being investigated, and they're still being investigated to this day. So as far as publication date, that's more of an open-ended question, but I hope I got the essence of what you were getting at.
For those who want to find more about how these intelligence services created Al-Qaeda and may have had a hand in other operations like the Chechen terrorists who carried out a major incident in Moscow this week, Jeff was the author of an article that is on the website this week called Not Again, Are Pearl and Wolfowitz Organizing the Next Al-Qaeda? Let me tell you how to read that. That's you go to the website, www.larouchepub.com/EIW. And that's the lead editorial for the current issue of the Electronic Intelligence Weekly. Again, that's called Not Again, Are Pearl and Wolfowitz Organizing the Next Al-Qaeda? And that takes up certain issues that are very important to recognize. What we have is the same gang that was involved in Iran-Contra, which we documented was running cocaine from Ibero-America under the guise of anti-communist actions through the White House, involving Ali North and top people who are in the government today. That apparatus from the policymakers are in the Defense Department, in the State Department. They're behind this Iraq war drive and this perversion of an anti-terrorist effort into a preemptive imperial war strategy. Jeff, there's another aspect of this. As I mentioned, Moscow, warfare against Russia. Can you tell us what is unfolding around the Moscow terrorist incident?
Well, I guess about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning today, Moscow time, there was a successful commando raid carried out by Russian special forces. They basically broke into the theater where 700 or so hostages were being held. The terrorists had begun systematically killing the hostages two at a time, and that sort of defined a moment of truth. And as I understand it, there was a number of people were killed, probably about 70 of the hostages. Almost all of the terrorists were killed. A handful of them were captured. So that incident has ended. It was very obviously...
But 700 or so people were saved.
Yes, exactly. 650 or so people were able to escape safely from the incident. Some of them are in hospitals. It was an effective paramilitary kind of special operation that did it. It's clear that this was an attempt to destabilize the Russian government using this Chechen operation as a lever for that destabilization at a moment that Russia has been playing a crucial role in the effort to stop this insane war drive in the Middle East. And so for the moment at least, it appears that the strategic destabilization, strategic irregular warfare attack against the Russian government has been defeated. I think that, you know, with the 700 people there, had the building been blown up by the terrorists and all of the people inside killed, you would have been looking at an incident on a scale of the September 11th attacks in the United States.
We have about 5 minutes left. I'm going to ask you to tell everyone who's listening now what form are these articles coming out in LaRouche publications that we can use to clean up the snake pit of the war party through this information and expose. And then we'll go to Doris, who's on the organizers' conference line from Washington State.
Well, I think at the beginning of the summer, Lyndon LaRouche launched a political initiative through his campaign to circulate millions and millions of updated news bulletins all across the United States. And the idea of these bulletins was to put the focus on the criminal elements in and around the administration that are leading the drive towards war. Between the first week in August and Labor Day weekend, there were 4 or 5 million leaflets circulated in the United States. I have no doubt that the circulation of that information played a pivotal role in stiffening the resistance to the war drive. We've rolled back the date of the war. Originally, they wanted to have it in September. It was rolled back to early October. We're now going into November, and it seems as if this thing is, at least for the moment, been successfully jammed up. Anyone listening on this call who is committed to stopping the war needs to get involved directly in the distribution of these leaflets, material that we've published on the website, the articles, the documentation, particularly now this material on the moon cult and their role as the financial glue behind the war party. Getting it out would be invaluable. And again, I would just emphasize that anybody who's committed to this fight needs to call that toll-free number and make contact, arrange to get material, and find out how you can become active. That number is 888-347-3258.
Okay, I hope we have time to get Doris's question and your answer. Let's give it a try. Doris, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I want to go back a bit concerning Jerry Falwell. When the Tammy and Jim Baker organization collapsed, did not Jerry Falwell swoop in there and do some dirty things to grab that situation? Or does that ring a bell for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, I think that remember, during that early phase of the Bush senior administration, a number of things happened. First and foremost, Lyndon LaRouche was railroaded into jail. In fact, he was thrown in federal prison for 5 years, practically the day of the Bush inauguration in January 1989. Baker's operation was targeted because he was not particularly one of these political boosters of the Bush apparatus, like Falwell and Moon and these others. And so Baker was targeted. I don't know all of the ins and outs of the case, but relative to the criminality of Diamond Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell ripping off his own people for the to the tune of $73 million, the Baker case appears to have been a case of political targeting, and yes, Falwell's people did swoop in, as far as I know, and grab up the pieces. This is a nasty Elmer Gantry apparatus, and you combine it with billions and billions of dollars of Moon-provided drug money, and you've got, I think you could call it fairly, the mother of all corruption today.
Jeff, we have a minute left. You've given us an incredible amount of information on the sexual perversion, the criminal money links of the Reverend Sun Myung Moon apparatus internationally, and their ties to the war party. As a last question, we have about 10 days to the U.S. elections, and what do you think EIR and Mr. LaRouche will be doing during that period?
Well, of course, we've got candidates in a number of parts of the country. Part of the show last week I enjoyed very, very much was the discussion that you had with Mr. LaRouche and three of the candidates, Nancy Spanis in Virginia, Carrie Lowry in Michigan, and Lori Dobson up in Connecticut. I think that the American people are waking up to the fact that this war is an even bigger travesty than they've previously thought. As they see the continuing collapse of the economy, these pathetic efforts by the Fed and others on the plunge protection team to jack up the stock market with Viagra is, you know, really a short-term phenomenon that may or may not even last through Election Day. But I think anybody in their right mind in this country knows that we are in the throes of simultaneously a horrible financial collapse and a physical economic breakdown process that's even going faster. And that's the reality on Election Day. And I hope people are alive and awake to think about what really is the case and follow LaRouche's advice not to go to war.
Thank you. You've been listening to The LaRouche Show for October 26th. Join us next week from 3 to 4 p.m. Thank you.